Hello and welcome back to Foolishly Faithful. This is episode 37. The date is Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. And as of today, the Mets are in the win column. Well, we've actually been in the win column. All right. We've been in the win column a few times this past week since we recorded. Finally on the board. We're no longer completely in the dumps. But we've made some progress, and we're here to talk about it. So in this past week, the Mets have won some games. We played a doubleheader versus Detroit, where we lost 3-6 in the first game, but won the first game of the season on a Tyrone Taylor walk-off for the first win to close out the homestand. And then we headed off to Cincinnati, where we got the first win against the Reds 3-2, lost the second game 6-9, and won the rubber games 3-1. Then we flew down to Atlanta, and we eked out a win 8-7 for the first game of the series. And then the second game of the series, we were down and came back and almost tied it up, but lost the game 5-6. And today on Wednesday, the Mets have been rained out. So there will be no game today, but the makeup should be sometime in September, as we're told. Here with David and Ray. Guys, how are we feeling about this first week, finally in the win column for the Metsies?
It's nice to get some wins. You know, it's nice to kind of get that out of the way. Knew they were coming, but, you know, 0-4, 0-5, what was it? Like, it didn't feel good at that point. So it's nice to finally get that off our back. Things are coming around. What do we lose? And then we won, what do we win, like 3-4 out of the next 5 or so? So they're starting to come around. Definitely a little shaky there against Atlanta. But, I mean, you know, whether the game feels like a one-run game or not, we're holding our own against Atlanta, and they're arguably the best in the league. So feels a lot better than it was last week.
I agree. I definitely second that or third that, because the first week of the year I was down in the dumps, and this week, you know, brought a lot of hope back. I'm not, you know, putting the horse in front of the cart just yet, but, you know, scrappy win against the Braves, like, that's big for us. Almost tied it up last night. I would say that was our biggest challenger this year, and, you know, we faced them well enough, considering what we should be. But all the other wins, you know, they were super tight. You know, the first win, it was a walk-off. The first win against Atlanta, it was 8-7. You know, the only one that we really kind of, like, took in stride was Sunday's game with Manea pitching. You know, but I think some of the players that we've been critical of have stepped up in ways that we've needed them to step up. They're definitely not where we want them to be, but, you know, they're making steady improvements as the team is as a whole, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think it's a good observation, Ray, about the close games, because it's the type of games you want. It's better than, I mean, I feel like the first 5 losses, it just felt like we were completely out of it. But at least these last games where they were close, felt like we were trying a little bit. And maybe that's just like the Atlanta effect, that, you know, they're the reigning division champions. They're the team to beat in the National League and next to the Dodgers. So maybe every team approaches playing them like it's the World Series, but I'm glad we showed up at least for the first 2 games so far.
Yeah, because, like, if my opinion would be a little bit different if we were just blowing out these teams where all the bats just came alive and I'm like, all right, this is the team that we thought that they could be. Yeah. We're not there yet. So I'm still, you know, like, I'm still on the fence, but I see some promise.
Definitely. Yeah. The Cincinnati game, I think, yeah, the Manea start was good. And then I feel like it was close near the end, though, too. Like, I think Diaz made the save in that final game.
Mm-hmm. Diaz was pitching well. You know, all our starters from that series pitched well. Quintana had a good start. Severino had a good start, but he got blown up. He didn't get blown up. Somebody else got blown up. One thing I think, like, I've noticed, I don't love how they're managing the bullpen. You know, like, a good example of that is the first leg of the doubleheader. You know, Hauser wasn't doing too bad. He went 5 innings, and then they pulled him, and we used seven pitchers, including Diaz and Tonkin, and, you know, Tonkin blew it again. So I guess that's why he got, you know, got the boot. But how do you use 7 pitchers of your bullpen knowing that you have another game to play right after that? You know, we Mendoza's got to do a better job at, managing this bullpen because we're already thin as it is.
Speaking of the bullpen as well, just another note, I don't know if you guys caught in the, I think it was the first game against the Braves when we were up and I forgot who they threw in, but everyone is kind of questioning, where is Diaz? Why is Diaz not pitching? And Mendoza basically was like, yeah, we're not going to put Diaz in. Like, he was not going to pitch here. He pitched the day before. Like, it's game 10 of a long season. And like, he basically wasn't putting Diaz in that situation. But I don't understand that. It's like, I feel like you got to throw him in. This is the Braves. This is the best team in the league. You want to say you're a playoff team? You want to say you can compete with the best? You got the best. You got Diaz. I think you throw him in game one. And it's not game two or three of the series. This is game one of the series. This is the first time you're playing them. This is, you just came off like a few wins against, you won a series in Cincinnati. Like, I think you start off strong. And I thought that was really, really interesting to know. I mean, I think we just lucked out, honestly, by winning that game. I think Diaz would have been the smarter move, even though we won.
Yeah, I agree. I also was kind of perplexed why he was out. I mean, I guess the argument is that he's coming off an injury year, so you have to take it easy, and it's the beginning of the season, right? He pitched two games in Cincinnati. Funnily enough, like the second game where we lost, his brother pitched and saved the game. I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, I don't know. Going into Atlanta, it's like that's the type of thing where you have to plan. Plan out your pitching because you have a tougher matchup coming up. It reminds me of all the times that Mets managers in the past have done that when they know, like, when they know we have a division rival coming up. Like, if I'm thinking back to like 2015, like I think Terry Collins started with a different rotation coming out of the All-Star break. Normally, he would have come out with the opening day starter in the second half, but he scheduled it so because we saw the Nationals like the second series. Coming out of the All-Star break, and he's like he wanted his top three pitchers for that series. And in the same way, I think like 2 years ago with the series in Atlanta, which obviously we got swept, but I think Buck had planned it out so we would see Scherzer, DeGrom, and Bassett against the Braves, which is what you want. You want those three. Like that's the guys that we and obviously they couldn't get the job done, but those are the three guys that you want. And I think you got to start thinking ahead a little bit. It's like we have a big series against the Braves coming up. You want to have Diaz. And there were a lot of moments where we could use Diaz. You had the bases loaded. You had to like, and somehow we got away with only giving up 2 runs out of that in that final, I think, or three or I forget what the margin was going into that in the save opportunity. But it was a little too close. I think that Lopez walked in 2 runs before finally getting the out.
Yeah, I think it was like 8-6, but it was just like the first like three pitches or three batters. It was like long ball after long ball, and it just I was sweating a lot.
Oh my God. Through the
And
heart of the lineup too. It's like straight right through to Acuña, Albies,
yeah,
Olsen. I think it was Riley that ended out that finished the game.
mean, listen, we won, right? Ultimately, like, you gotta have faith in the guys you got, and Lopez did have some save opportunities. He in I forgot what team it was, but a couple of years ago he did used to be a closer, or at least closed some games, so he has experience in that field. So I don't know, good for him. At least maybe that was part of it for Mendoza. I
Wanting to get
mean,
the other guys just the confidence. I hear that argument too.
I like that argument too.
one, and
We can't
I
rely
think
on
it
one
is
person for the rest of the
suspect,
year.
but I don't know.
But he
It's
was
something to
saying
keep an
something
eye out.
about like they didn't have their best arms in the bullpen at all, like including people in addition to Diaz. And like I don't know who else that includes. Does that include Ottavino? Does it include Drew Smith? I don't know if I watched the full presser afterwards.
Well, like one hot take is that, after today's game, we're on 4 or 5 rainouts. Like how do you think that affects, players' preparation and going in? I know that like pitchers have like, really regimented routines where, you're warming up, you're getting ready for a game. Like I think I mentioned this last week, for at least for starting pitchers, there's a rainout like throw you off your game because you were prepared to pitch today and now it's tomorrow, and in some cases tomorrow. So would that be the same for like relief pitching in the bullpen? You know, maybe the arms aren't hot because there's just so many, you know, changes in schedules.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think about that too. And I think like, because I know that like in rainouts, like if you're a starting pitcher and you're supposed to go that day and they call it that day, then they can, I think it can fuck with your schedule a little bit. Like it's not clear if you can pitch the very next day, because I think a lot of starting pitchers especially are on kind of like the start day, 2 days rest, bullpen day, 2 days rest, start day. And it kind of goes in that cycle. Relief pitchers, I feel like the general not like knowledge that I know of is like rainouts are good for them no matter what, because it gives everyone a rest, because people are just more accustomed to
True.
pitching whenever. I guess people aren't really on cycles as much, but I
And
guess
they're not
that's
expected to
interesting.
throw 100 pitches, you know, they're there for 20 at tops.
Right, exactly. It's just like a bullpen. But we'll see. I mean, I guess, we have veteran pitchers mainly across the board, so hopefully you should be able to handle that. But I also wonder how rainouts handle like momentum, right? It's like, I think for the Mets, like having the rainout today when it would have been the third game in Atlanta, coming off of a win and a close loss, I don't know who that hurts or helps, if it does.
An early game tomorrow, and then we're going home for the weekend. So,
We're going home after the Atlanta series? Nice.
Kansas City on
Kansas City at
Thursday,
home. Nice,
or
nice, nice.
on Friday, and
Cool.
then Pirates on Monday to Wednesday. It's a 6-game homestand.
All right. All right. All right. Yeah, I'd love to get out of Atlanta with one more win, obviously, to win the series. But I think I would have taken a tie, a split of four, because it was four games. I would have taken a split going into the series. But now that we're down a game, well, I guess we're taking the win. That's what we're hoping for.
Well, who's going to go for us tomorrow then?
Yeah, I don't know who's on
Is
the mound.
it going to be Severino who maybe?
Let's see. Let's check our probables. But I think if it was Hauser yesterday, and
Buddha.
then is it Buto? Is Buto still on the roster?
If Buddha's still in the rotation, it would be him.
Oh.
It lists Quintana tomorrow on
Oh.
MLB.com. Severino is slated to go on Friday, Minaya on Saturday.
Well, was it Quintana scheduled for tomorrow before the rainout?
That's interesting.
Because like,
That is
if
interesting.
Buddha was going to go today, maybe they'll roll him into tomorrow and give Quintana a rest for Friday night.
But that could be the same thing I said, just said with the cycles, where it's like
Yep.
if Quintana was always slated to go tomorrow, then and Buto was supposed to go today, then maybe they send Buto down. Maybe there's a roster move where Buto gets sent down and we move him for some arms and stuff. I'm not sure.
Don't think we have anybody better.
For a starter or for the
Aside from
bullpen?
for starting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we tried someone new already this week,
Well, yeah,
which we'll
we'll get
get
to
to
that.
in the second half when we talk about some Mets news and roster changes. All right, well, I think I do want to talk about what you guys are seeing in terms of improvements, because obviously we've won some games. So what has stood out to you about, I guess, individual improvements or team improvements as a whole?
I'll take the first one.
Start us off, Ray.
This year, he's my rival. He's my detested player, Jeff McNeil. And I have to admit, I think he's been making improvements. You know, he had the one big home run. I think there was a Friday game against Cincy. And then after that, he drew like three walks in a game and another walk in positions that we wanted it to like to happen. You know, we have a runner on first, get into scoring position, and let somebody else do the work. And, you know, he's improved his on-base percentage. He's improved his average, mostly through walks. But, you know, if you get on base and you don't produce an out, I'll take it because you see the results on the scoreboard. So I think he's on the up and up. But it's because they dropped him down into the 6 and 7 hole. He's not a top four hitter right now. I don't know if he can be. He
Yeah.
might get back to that. But he's had more success, like, lower down in the lineup, so why fight it?
Yeah. Yeah, you and me both have both been big McNeil haters to start the year. He's been looking real squirrely and real, like, can't control himself, just hacking. He's popping stuff up, just like cans of corn to the outfield. And here's the thing about that home run in Cincinnati was like, To me, it's like that's what he was looking, he's been looking for the past week and a half, and now he finally has his home run. So maybe now he could settle down. Maybe now he's like, all right, I got the home run out of the way. Like now I'm just gonna settle in and I'm gonna hit like I know how to. 'Cause
It's like your first confidence boost. Like once you get it, like you could walk with your head a little bit higher.
And also
And
it's like it's not as distracting too. It's like, oh, it's like I've been trying to get this home hit, like hit a home run and just go yard for forever. So do it and then just go back to like slapping the ball like we need you to.
the hands like way up on the bat.
Oh my gosh.
No knob.
I mean, I think McNeil and his baseball bat are like the most interesting, is one of the most interesting aspects of the game. 'Cause it's like he's holding a big like cardboard tube and you're playing kind of like warehouse ball of some sort where you're just like kind of like slashing at the ball. Like it's like a, like you're practice, like you're a knight practicing on like a dummy in like a courtyard and the dummy's like filled with hay and you're like, you know,
It's like stickball.
it's like stick. You're right. It's almost like stickball where you just, but it's just weird. It's almost like a martial art, but that's what I need him to do. And you just look around the field and see where the holes are and just slap the ball. But yes, I agree. I think the walks, taking more walks is really, it's good to see. I think it's evidence of some improvement.
Anybody else have somebody to talk about it?
Honestly, I gotta say, Beatty has been looking real nice. It's nice to see him coming along a little bit. And maybe just to get away from home or so. Maybe that's, you know, it's not like too much of a difference. We had what, one homestand and one away game series, but it's been nice. Beatty is kind of showing what he was supposed to be. He's leading the team in average for the year. You know, last what 7 days he's hitting like, I just lost it. He's in 357 the last 7 days. I mean, he's coming along and it's nice to see. It's not like clutch necessarily. He's hitting the back of the lineup, but I mean, there's not too many clutch situations to be had. But he's hitting the ball at least, and I like it.
And it's not only behind the plate, it's also on the field. You know,
Yes.
we wanted him as our third baseman going forward. We invested a lot into him after letting Escobar go and, you know, not signing other third basemen. One of our biggest issues with him last year, I feel like, was his ability to field. You know, there was too many errors or like missteps. And I feel like I haven't seen any or heard of any this year. And if it is, it's like it's minor. So that's one of the biggest things. Like, you know, we talk about hitting and pitching a lot, but you know, defensive ability in the field, especially the infield, he's playing hot corner. Like you need to be able to get down. That's why David Wright was such a big player for us. Not only did he hit, but he was a great fielder.
Honestly, the games I'm watching and the balls that are hit to third baseman, like it's kind of, I don't really watch too many other third basemen play, but just to see him like kick the ball and just gun it to first base, I feel like he just has a cannon. Like, I don't know how fast he's throwing it, but you're right. Like, it seems like he's just charging the ball and he's on it and he's just gunning it to first, and they're all on point. So.
That was our issue when we were talking about shortstops last week with, you know, creating the double play. You know, if we want to become a better team, we have to become hard nosed in the field as well as behind the bats.
Yeah, I will agree on Beatty. I think he has surprised me. I started opening day really low on him, but he has shown that he's nothing but really good, and his arm is fantastic. I do still think he needs a lot of work in the field, though. I think from to my eyes, I think he moves a little too slow at third. He's big. He feels kind of stiff. I don't really like the way he feels. He kind of goes down and gloves it with one hand and brings the glove up to his body for his throwing hand to meet the ball. Like I want to see him get down there with two hands and like really go and get the ball and just have like a quick throw, especially on the turns to second on the double plays. I want to see him be there and get lower. And I just feel like he's tall. He's a big guy. And it just looks kind of, it looks a little clunky still. He looks a little stiff. But I mean, he's making some great plays. He had that great snag on the liner. Ray, like you said, his arm is fantastic. But I'm trying to think of what player
He's not
seems
there
more.
yet, but
He's not there
he's
yet.
getting there.
Yeah,
He's
I'm trying
getting
to think
there.
of what like player I can think of that is like more prototypical that I want to see him like. It's fine. I just saw the Manny Machado clip online today of him when Manny Machado was on the Orioles years ago, where it was like the hot shot behind third, and he gets it, and Not
The barehanded? He
the one against the
barehands it from
Yankees where
first?
he no. This is one where he gets in his glove and it's like coming out of his glove and he's snow coning it. And he's like in left field and he like grabs it, he double clutches, and then he fires probably like 95 miles an hour across the diamond to get the guy by a step. And I don't know. I mean, Manny's always been so smooth, and Brett Beatty does not seem like he will get there, but I do. There's got to be a player that he can emulate because it's not. I don't even know if David Wright felt a little quicker. David Wright felt
Yeah.
like he was a little lower to the ground.
He
Like,
was a little more
imagine.
compact.
Definitely. I think that's a great word. Definitely compact. Yeah. Because, like, when I'm picturing David Wright, like, going for the bare hands on the slow rollers to third, and the David Wright, like, stick your tongue out, like, and, like, whip it across. I don't. Brett Beatty feels too stiff. So maybe he has to just find a different role model or
Well, now
find
that you
someone else
say
to
that,
emulate.
I feel like that's kind of been like the MO for like a lot of the Mets' like recent young kids. Like Mauricio's tall and lanky. Beatty's tall and lanky. Luis Angel's a little tall and lanky. It's like, if they have that athletic ability to whip it around like that, that's one thing. But yeah, like if you can't get down, double clutch it,
Yeah.
and just have like that power in your wheelhouse, they might not survive like in a defensive role. It's
It looks
interesting.
like between Manny Machado and Brett Beatty, they're both 6'3", and they both are basically have the same arm strength. So, listen, I know it
So,
looks Manny Machado looks way smoother than Brett Beatty, but they're both throwing about 85, 86 miles an hour,
how
and
much do they weigh? I feel like
that's a great question. You're right on that.
stockiness.
Yeah, maybe Brett Brady needs to go to a Manny Machado camp or something and get
Just got to eat some
lessons.
more meat.
It's what do some yoga. All right. Well, Beatty, I agree. Massive improvement. I would like to talk about Nimmo. I think Nimmo has also seen a good improvement in the past few days. He's really taking a lot more pitches. I mean, he had the 5 RBI game in Atlanta for the first game of the
He was
series.
the
Two,
hero of that game. He was the
two,
hero of that game.
yeah, two home runs, and also an RBI single. I think he had four RBI through the home run. He had a solo shot, a 3-run home run, and then an RBI single late. And yeah, I guess he's finally punishing pitchers who are throwing him in the zone because maybe he's just found the confidence to know that there's strikes and that there people are throwing him strikes, and he's just going to take advantage of it. And this could be one of those things that, again, will go in and out through the season where, he's responding to what pitcher's game plan is for him, which is attacking the zone because they know he's taking. And then he's going to start attacking the zone. And then the pitchers are going to go like switch it up again and be like, all right, well, we're going to throw it out of the zone. So he chases. But I think it was great. It was good to see him feel a little more Nimmo-ish, taking more pitches, long at bats. I mean, he had like a 10 pitch at bat the other day. So good to see for Nims.
Well, that's a talent of a good where everything comes in waves, like you said. If pitchers know that you're swinging and hacking, they're gonna throw around you, and if they know that you're waiting and taking strikes and balls, they're gonna do the opposite. So if he wants to succeed, which he has done for most of his career, but now people have caught on. Like he's not like this new name guy anymore. Like he's a certified all-star. People are doing research about him. So he's got to, make adjustments as they come. And I think that game, like you said, was the perfect, essence of that, where, okay, if they're going to throw inside to me, I'm just going to let it rip. The shot to right field, that was like 400 something feet. Like it went into like the bar
Oh, he
on
crushed
like
that.
the middle deck. And then the second shot was dead center. So it's like, I'll put it wherever I can. I'm not limited to, cranking it to left field every time it comes. And, that speaks to his growth. But let's see, like, once they start pitching around him, if he's still hacking. So.
He's got the power. I mean, he's certainly strong enough. I think
Yeah.
he's way stronger than it might appear. And he definitely has that juice if he can.
He made a career on drawing walks and, singles and doubles, but he's always had the power. He's just got to embrace it now.
Not a certified all-star yet. One day, maybe this year. We're gonna know.
He hasn't made an all-star selection?
Nope. Sadly. Sadly, not. Jeff McNeil's an all-star, though.
Yeah, well, that was bad in title here.
David.
You're muted.
You're muted, David.
I'm muted myself. I would just like to add that Tyrone Taylor has been hitting pretty well. And he's, some guy no one really knew what to expect from him. And we thought Bader was going to take center field. But again, it's been what, 10 days in the season? But like the last week, Tyrone Taylor is he's qualified right now as a center fielder for the last 7 days, more than Bader. He's hitting 300 last 7 days. I mean, again, maybe slow start, maybe just get away from home and just like get on the road in the swing of things, but he's been hitting well.
Yeah, I mean, he had the walk-off hit as well. And he made that fantastic play in left field up against the wall when he's on, like, defensively, that is. Big surprise. Yeah, big fan.
We all thought it was going to be Bader, but maybe he just takes the center field role.
I haven't heard much about Bader.
No.
I feel like he hasn't been in the lineup too much.
I mean, if Taylor's hitting and they're playing the same position,
Yeah.
got to play the hot hand there.
Bingo.
I think Bader was in yesterday. He had two hits, and he actually, I mean, he had a hit in the ninth. I feel like Bader's always been a little bit clutch, when I've seen him on other teams, but he had a hit in the ninth before, I guess, Nervais had the double and he drove him in. I mean, Nervais, another person who's hitting. Yeah, it seems like a lot of people to talk about in terms of improvements. A lot of players are hitting well, people who come out of nowhere. Who else? We got Lindor with his first home run of the year in Cincinnati. Not really helping his overall cause in terms of hits. His average is still at what we see it was 0.086, something like that. Pretty low. And we'll talk about this whole movement to give him a standing ovation in the second half as well. But I guess lastly on improvements, there's team improvements. I mean, the Mets have been coming from behind recently. They were down four in the first game in Atlanta before the home runs from Nimmo, and then I guess DJ Stewart later on that night too. As you know, big team comeback. We hadn't done that all year, and then last night almost came back, but I think they were down 6 runs or 5 runs, and they brought it back to within a run. So it's a good fight that you like to see, and hope to see more of it. You know, hope that there's more there. It sucks seeing a team just fall flat.
Let's never say die ball. And, you know, once you start, you know, living that life, it turns around because it's better than rolling over and dying. Like, look at Miami right now. Miami's in shambles. And it just looks like they have no spark. You know, we had a terrible start. And we're trying to put it together where we can. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's gonna be baby steps because we're still waiting on some of our other pitchers to come back. We're waiting for some of our batters to come up. And that's why baseball is 162 games a year. You know, it's a long season for a reason.
Preach.
Is interesting though. It's like, do we have the fight and are making a push at the end, or is it that we're down by so much at the end that it feels like a lot less pressure? Like, oh, we lost this game, game's done. Let's just tack on a couple runs because there's like no pressure to like, lose the game here.
I
And
don't think that's the case
that is the
because
Mets
look at it.
question. Yeah, that's the Mets question. That's
I
But
don't
I
think
will
it's the
say, I
case
think
this
like,
year because look at Atlanta series. You know, if that's the team to lay over and die for, and we
yeah.
didn't.
It felt motivated last night. I mean, Alonso had the 3-run home run, cut it in half, and that it wasn't like it was all just one inning either. It was like over the course of 2 innings, and they got Alonso obviously struck out to end the game in the ninth, but they got him up again, and they put two more runs on the board to make it close. So
It's the sum of all the little pieces, as
it
like
felt a
Babish would
little,
say.
yeah.
Yeah.
But
It
I
kind
mean,
of
I
felt
think
like
the
that when it was like 6-0 in the eighth. But then I was like, okay, like they have something 6-3. Like, all right,
there's
let's
two
just get
people on.
something on there.
Yeah.
Three runs. You're still down 3 runs. But then it's like, all right, you come back in the ninth. That was nice to see that they're at least like leading
Exactly.
on that.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was at. I feel like usually the Mets, it's like, all right, you get three in the ninth, the 3-run home run in the ninth. Like, cool. Like, doesn't end up getting you anywhere.
Yeah. But
But if they don't do that, how will you ever be in a position for a comeback?
yeah, no, for sure. It's just
I agree. I mean, the pessimist in me always definitely says, ah, they know they're losers. Why not just try? But the optimist wants to think that, they're actually trying. So, speaking of things that, the Mets can improve on, I definitely think while there have been improvements, there are some small things that, small, maybe large things that we still need a lot of work on. I think starting pitching is definitely number one. Hazard's gotten beaten up a lot. Quintana was fine in Cincinnati, but still walked four people. We had this whole thing with, I mean, obviously Senga is still hurt. We'll talk about his IL moves as well. But yeah, it hasn't looked great. It still feels like we're having short starts, five innings max. So need some real stalwart pitching, and we just don't have that.
I haven't really looked at like the pitch count, but like with some of those, short outings, is that just like overmanaging, or like are they at like 90, 100 pitches where we got to take them out in the fifth or sixth?
Not sure. It's always felt weird, and I feel like everything these days feels like overmanaging, but I don't know, I just feel we haven't looked great either. I'm not sure I have the answer for this one, to be honest. This is just a complaint that is sticking with me. Well, until I see improvement, I'm gonna keep bringing it
Of
up, I think.
course.
It's hard to tell this state. Is it overmanagement or not? I
Yeah.
feel like it's still so early to tell.
Well, if you look around the league, like I was talking to Steve, sorry that he's not here right now, but I feel like there's been a bunch of pitchers that have been going down, like star pitchers, elbow soreness, Tommy John, this, that. And he told me that, like, it's not more common than in past years. But there's still something to be said. Like, I think Spencer Strider went down.
Yeah, Shane Bieber on the
Bieber went
Guardians.
down. Louis, I forget. There's another pitcher that went down.
One of the Braves pitchers, right? Like he came
It's
in and
Spencer
pitched
Strider.
one pitch. No, he came in and pitched, or was it the Reds? He came in and pitched one pitch against
Oh,
us.
TJ Antone on the
Yeah,
Reds.
on the Reds, yeah.
I mean, the other kid on the Marlins, Yuri Perez, is that who you're
Yuri
thinking
Perez,
about?
that's what I was
Yuri
thinking
Perez, who
of.
was like Sandy Alcantara's like mini me. That
Yeah.
like they thought was gonna be the next guy.
And Alcantara's still out. Like,
Well, he
is.
really took a note to that, right?
Yeah, follow suit. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, is there some merit to what, our guys are talking about with limiting pitchers, keeping Diaz? Like, he's only seen five starts this year out of 11 games. Not starts, but five appearances. But maybe letting these guys get more rest. I don't know. So when you look at like Japanese ball teams, like they don't really have that, and these pitchers are coming in really hot.
It's really interesting, and I think it was that Reds game, like right after that guy threw one pitch and got out. Like Gary and Ron, I believe, were like having a conversation about this and like, what do you do about it? And like Ron's point was kind of like, this starts in Little League, when it's like the coach who wants to win is gonna send the kid out there and like keep pushing their kid, and that's just what they're gonna do. They've been doing this for how many years to get up to the big leagues? So I know it's kind of sure you can limit the innings now like a little bit and try to manage it, but their arm has already been taxed so much to get here. So I don't,
Look at DeGrom. He's on his second or third
third,
TJ.
yeah.
Look, Johan Santana, after that, after his complete game, his arm was dead.
Yeah.
Matt
I don't know what to
Harvey,
do. I mean,
the name.
it's gonna keep going, and I don't know what the answer is
Yeah.
for the speed, because I think the speed, like, it's hard to go back down. I saw there was a Chris Bassitt comment about, he was saying like, the human body is not meant to throw 100 miles an hour. The human body can throw 90 safely, but 100 is pushing it. I think there's some merit to that, but the question then becomes, what happens to competition in the league? Does everyone go back to start throwing 90, and then hitters are just overpowering pitchers because they're used to not to 100?
Well, that's
That's true.
the similar to the running backs in football. Like, I feel like that's kind of the way running backs work, for better or worse. It's
Yeah.
you draft a really good running back, you kind of push them to the limit for a couple of years, and then they're out of the league by like 27, if
Yeah.
that. Like, it seems like pitching is, you get a couple guys, sure, they can last and like do amazing like Verlander or something, but it's a lot of these
Definitely
guys,
got,
maybe that's just it. You just kind
different
of get a
era.
couple good years out of them.
Well, that speaks to a Bartolo Colon that after 40 years of age, you're still figuring out a way of doing it.
Yeah, it's I don't know how evolution how the evolution of pitching will continue. I'm gonna be following it very closely over the next however many years it goes because it's super fascinating.
We'll put a mile per hour cap on pitching. If you throw over 100 miles an hour, that's a ball.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how it goes. All right. I think that'll wrap up our first half. In the second half, we have a trivia guess the Met question for you. We'll talk a little bit about some Mets news, the roster changes, and all that good stuff. And then a little bit of a look ahead. So we will take a quick break. Hello, and welcome back to Foolishly Faithful. We will jump right into trivia, but we ended our last half talking about throwing 100 miles an hour and all the people who are getting hurt. We're having a little discussion during our break. David mentioned that, maybe perhaps they institute a rule where you can't throw above 100 miles an hour. But there's been a lot of discussion around Major League Baseball recently about the reason for all these injuries potentially being the pitch clock and how the pitch clock is now unnatural. You have to throw too many times in too short of a span, and that's what's really causing all the injury on these people's arms. And I said there's no way they would change the pitch clock because it's a new rule and they're going to stick with it. And David told me that there's a new rule in the NFL that I was very surprised to hear, David.
Yeah, they keep tinkering with the kickoffs. If basically now the kickoff is changing, it's a whole convoluted thing. I don't even understand it. There's a quote unquote setup zone, and all of the kicking players have to line up about 15 yards at least in front of the kicker. Yada yada yada. It doesn't really matter. You can read it if you're interested. What I found the most interesting was the onside kick rule is basically not in play anymore. You can only do an onside kick if you're the trailing team in the fourth quarter, so it has to be declared prior to the kick, and it can only be used twice per game. So
So
if
stupid.
Well, I think that there's like an even more pressing rule than that. If on the kickoff at any point in the game you kick it out of the end zone, you're not setting up at the 20-yard line at this point. Like you're setting up at the 25 or the 40. Like
I believe it's
the
the 40, but that's been a rule.
when did they start that?
At the 40? I thought it was at the 25.
It was a
If you kick
20.
it out of bounds, it's
No,
been the 40.
out of the back of the end
Out
zone.
of the
Not
back of the end
oh.
zone.
That's
Like
ridiculous.
now you go to in the 40 because like people like you would have this guy with a big leg come up and just boot it, and on a kickoff it would go straight through the uprights,
Yeah.
and then you start at the 20, versus giving a Devin Hester the ability to run it back 100 yards.
Yeah.
But now if you're starting at the 40, like you're giving up so much field position, like
Yeah.
you're starting at like half like at the halfway point, you get two first downs and you're in kickoff in field goal position.
It's crazy. Anyway, so
So it's a punishment.
the reason I brought this up was because I'm talking about rule changes that initially were meant to like help player health and safety, right? The kickoffs were some of the most dangerous plays in football because you have people running full speed, taking people out on blocks. And now the NFL is probably thinking, no, kickoff returns are a lot of fun. You get to see someone run the ball back the entire field. And I guess it just made me think about, could the pitch clock ever be changed? I mean, if it does have an effect on health, is it altered in any way? But I'd also think that the point about having to declare your onside kick is really funny. It's like, what if you had to declare, all right, I'm gonna throw in a 100 mile an hour fastball. So just FYI, this is coming. I only get five of these a game, but I'm gonna throw one now. So try and hit it.
That's so funny to think about. And
It'll never come to that,
it'll,
but
no, of course not. But I think, the NFL, like the MLB, is another one of those sports that just can't figure out its own rules.
it's super progressive. You never know.
Trying to figure out what's going to come next. All
I'm
right.
sure they'll keep tinkering with the times. And
Yeah,
it's interesting.
it'll.
Baseball started with you had to declare what pitch you were going to throw, or the hitter requested it.
When
So that
was
was the
this?
1800s.
Oh,
So that
1800s.
was,
Okay.
yeah, sorry.
Throw me the fast
But
one. Yeah. Throw me the
honestly,
looper.
in regards to that, I do feel like the games are going a lot quicker nowadays,
Oh, for sure.
and
You
I I'm kind of conflicted. You know, in the past, I would say it's like, oh, there's so many baseball games a year. Like, if you're losing, like, get through it, we just end the game. But when you have like a really good game, like, I don't want to see that. It's almost like the NHL, where like they have one set of rules for like the regular season, but then in playoffs, overtime is unlimited. Like, I think they made the adjustment years ago where if you got to overtime, it was 3-on-3 for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then shootout. But in the playoffs, it's 5-on-5 or 4-on-4.
Playoffs is the
I
same
think
rules. Playoffs is there's another period.
it's 5-on-5. And we've seen three OTs, four OTs. I know that we're murdering these guys' bodies playing an entire extra game sometimes. But, you know, these are athletes. Like, you know, it's the essence of the sport. That's your job. Like, is the reason why you're not like laying road or, you know, being an engineer. Like,
They
you're
should be
an
able to
athlete. Like,
handle it.
you.
They should be able to handle it, but also to David's point, it's like running backs. You just, or maybe it was your point, right? You just run through them, and it's like maybe that's just the future of the sport. Okay. Anyways,
Speaking of rule changes, baseball on ice, Ray, is that what you were suggesting? We've
no,
gone off
I'm
the
just
rails.
saying
We've
it's
gone
just
off the rails. Sorry.
like
We've gone off the rails. Sorry.
is it between like, you know, keeping the game like pure or, you know, adjusting it?
We'll see.
Well, listen on our next podcast. It's a football podcast. It's just called Foolish, a Jets podcast. So
Never faithful to the Jets. Okay.
That's hopeless. That's
All right.
hopeless.
I have a trivia question for you guys. Trivia. Trivia, trivia, trivia. All right. It's guess the Met. This Met, are you ready? This Met had a 16-year Major League Baseball career and only played the last 2 years of this career with the Mets, despite having a 243 batting average lifetime and a lifetime on base percentage of 769. He played spectacularly for the Mets in 2006, where he had a batting average of 271 and an OPS of 820. He also had 18 home runs and 62 RBI. And he played in 137 games.
That was 2006.
2006. And he played
Was
his
he
last 2 years of his career, 2006 and 2007.
could I request a hint? Was he an infielder or outfielder?
I won't give that to you right now. We'll do it. You can ask that later when we reveal the answer. So stick
Oh,
around.
well, maybe pitcher, because during that time, you know, there was no DH for us.
I
No,
don't
I
think a
don't know.
pitcher got
No,
16 or 18 home runs and played all
he was
37.
definitely a position player, right? Definitely a position player.
All right. Right,
All right. All right.
I missed that part.
All right, let's move on to some Mets news that has happened in the past week. As we mentioned,
The Utes.
there have been a lot of DFAs, additions, roster moves, cortisone shots, IL moves, everything. The first one we'll mention is Johan Ramirez of Rhys Hoskins' 2-game suspension fame has been DFA'd by the Mets.
Bye-bye.
Whether it was because of his connection to that incident, or whether the fact that he just kind of sucked near the end of his
I think
Mets
the latter.
tenure, I think it's probably the latter. But he's been DFA'd. But in a way that seems like so Mets for him to like serve a 2-game suspension, we lose a roster spot and then we end up just DFAing him anyways. I don't think if we DFA'd him after that happened and he. I think we probably still would have had to serve a penalty on our roster, but
He'll end up on another team and be lights out as per Mets.
always, always, always. Another guy that we got that DFA was Michael Tonkin, who honestly, I mean, in his first appearances I saw, maybe I didn't see enough of him in his last appearances. I thought he was fine. He had some kind of long appearances that were good, but he also was DFA'd. He was another veteran player, so we could not set him down. We had to make room. But we DFA'd him, and then I guess he cleared waivers or something, and we traded him to the Twins for cash.
I think he was the guy, like the Monday game last week against Detroit, where he didn't get the earned runs, but you know he put the bloops into the outfield and
Oh, sure.
all the errors that came with that win. And
Yeah,
similarly with like his
Michael
next start.
Tonkin pitched 4 innings and gave up 6 hits on the season, along with a walk.
But
So,
they were always when like bases had runners on.
yeah, he has 2 earned runs, and but 8 actual runs.
Uncredited runs.
Regardless, he gave up 6 hits over 4 runs in the walk.
Exactly.
So he
Six hits and
still
four
is,
runs. 6 hits, 4 runs.
yeah.
Got it.
Sorry, 6 hits, 4 innings.
Four innings.
6 hits, 8 runs, but two of
Oh
them were
shit. You
earned.
didn't even mention 8 runs.
Only 2 of them were earned, though. So,
Still, 8 runs is crazy.
yeah.
Over 4 innings. I
Diaz
didn't realize it was that
has
bad.
what? Diaz has 5 innings and one walk, one run. Like
Yeah, he gave up
it's
a
a
run recently.
complete different animal.
Yeah.
He never helped us to get into a position to win.
Guess not. We'll see him on the Twins, maybe when we play the Twins this year. if he's still around then. The last person we DFA'd, we've DFA'd like 3 pitchers in the last week. Last person was Julio Teheran, who we signed for one game. Welcome to the Mets. He literally got a whole post on the Mets Instagram and everything, like Mets sign Julio Teheran, blah blah blah. And he starts one game. He gave up, there's like a 4 inning start, 2.5 innings, 2-3 inning start.
2.2 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, all of them earned.
Sleeper agent.
2 walks.
He was ex Milwaukee, ex
Ex
Washington or
Brave.
Atlanta.
Ex Brave. He killed us when he was on the Braves.
Yep. Sleeper agent. We should never sign him.
I mean, it's he. I thought he would have had those, him being in Atlanta, he'll feel comfortable, whatever, but
I
clearly that
think he
was
was
not
in
the
Milwaukee
case.
last year for like they signed him for like 2 days, something like that.
Oh yeah. I'm not
And
sure where he was, but I know he was a
another
Mets
rival.
killer. He was a Mets killer for a while. I guess I'm
Yep.
not too salty about it because we ended up winning that game that he pitched. But yeah, there's a whole deal because like he is a veteran, and I think he had a $2.5 million contract that he was guaranteed because he made spring training with the Orioles, so he's guaranteed that money somehow. But then I read that the Mets only paid him, were only like on the hook to pay him like $55,000 or $54,000. So quite the hustle for this guy. I
Maybe
mean,
that was like the Steve Cohen, business conglomerate guy move. He's just like, yo, we'll get him for like one start so we don't have to burn a 60-day IL.
yeah, super. Yeah, completely. Yeah. And like, not, dude, but just the fact that they didn't keep him, I think, for more than that one start, it was a little crazy to me. And I think
Shady.
these three moves, like these DFAs to start the season in the first week and a half, maybe it's a sign of kind of like the ruthlessness, dare I say, of the new Stearns Cohen administration. Right? It's like we're just gonna like cut him. Fuck it, cut him.
Maybe that's what we need because, like, we put so much like investment and hope in a Verlander or a Scherzer or all these big contracts that aren't playing out, and I want to say upper management, but maybe even Uncle Stevie's realizing, this isn't the same animal as the stock market. Like, we're not betting on companies, we're betting on humans.
Yeah, it's easier to just let like kind of peace with them, peace.
If you can't do it, like you're not Walmart, like
Yeah.
you're not going to pay me a dividend.
Yeah. I read something, I don't know where it was. Maybe that it was like an excerpt from The Athletic. Maybe it was just something on Twitter, but someone was saying how apparently Stevie Cohen at his firm was kind of known for doing similar cold moves, as one could imagine a billionaire might be, right? Where it's like, oh, you have a certain like portfolio that you're really attached to, like you really like this company, you really like this these stocks, but like once they start to decline, he's like, just gotta let them go. I don't care if you like them, like it's time to go.
I
And
know exactly what you're talking about. I
that's just the
read the
business
same
move.
article.
Yeah, I don't know where it was.
I read the same article where it was like, well, I hired you with this whole resume, and if you're telling me you could provide me this, if you can't, I'll find somebody else.
Like, good luck. Thanks. Like, appreciate what you've done so far, or not, or whatever, but
And
time to go.
it's polarizing because like business and sports, like we link that together nowadays. It's like if it's one and the same,
Yeah.
but it's so determined on like your performance in the immediate right now and there. So, a company or a conglomerate, they have a whole quarter, they have 3 months to figure it out. Now you're cutting people after five games. Like, we haven't even gotten to the first quarter of the baseball season, and he's already making cuts. It's Q1.
It's Q1. It's not even, yeah, it's still middle Q1. I think it's a good point though, Ray. I mean about the business. And I've always known, I mean, it's always like the signs have always been here that like the Mets are gonna be run like a business now. But it makes me worried a little bit about the, I guess that's like the clubhouse chemistry, the team chemistry, right? You have your people who are on these long contracts who will not be cut. Lindor, I mean, I guess who's to say they won't be traded, but like, you have people who are on this team who are probably going to be around for longer. But that's a huge part. It's like, again, you're dealing with humans. You're not dealing with numbers on a company and a, a stock's performance. You're dealing with players who like people, like their teammates like them and they work well together or whatever. And there's a bunch of intangibles you don't see based on statistics.
Intangibles.
Intangibles are real, are as real as
Exactly.
any stat. Honestly, I mean, they're
I
not visible to a
appreciate
lot of
myself.
people. Yeah, not visible to a lot of people. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the clubhouse we don't see. You can see some of it on TV, but yeah, it's
And then getting David Stearns on board with an analytic guy, it's almost like two demons getting together, and it's like, ugh, this is their focus.
load them up. Yeah,
It's
so we'll see.
hard.
We'll see. I mean, I hope, I don't want the Mets to become soulless is the really the thing that I'm worried about because I care so much about the Mets. I can't see them become a faceless entity. Like a
Mean, it's not uncharacteristic of them with Madoff and the Wilpons.
Yeah, but we've always had like a soul, We've always had kind of like whether it be our, the foolishly faithful loser mentality, second fiddle to the Yankees, whatever the identity was, there's always been that. I don't want us to become so good where we lose that.
I feel like I gotta
I
throw
agree.
the other side in here. First of all, I don't think we're that good as of yet to be like,
No.
oh yeah, we're so good, let's throw these other guys away. I don't think we're at that level yet. And not for nothing, these guys are kind of fringe players. We didn't, it's not like we're trading Alonso. I feel like that would show a lack of heart.
Yeah.
When people talk about that, he's not on a contract for next year. Do we trade him? We'll deal with that later in the season. But I mean, it's, yeah, it does suck to see them go, but they're not like the heart of the team, really. Like, I don't know what their presence was in the clubhouse. And I'm sorry if they're listening, which they probably are, but I don't know. They're kind of just fringe players at this point. And I'm not like, it's three players. They weren't really doing well. I mean, it does suck for Teron, like one start and you're out. Like, all right, that's a little, seems a little harsh. But he was also
No.
signed, like he wasn't signed in spring training. He was signed like a week ago. He's kind of signed like for
He
this.
would have been on a roster if he was good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
A good point.
But like to what you're saying, I do feel like as much as we love, Alonso and Diaz, who was our last like solid rock? Besides like Reyes or Wright. I hate to bring up the comparison, but the Yankees always had like a Jeter or a Mantle or this guy or that guy. Like, that's our Alonso, I guess, nowadays.
No, I mean, we have Lindor and we had DeGrom a little bit ago as well. So,
We
like, we definitely
had DeGrom.
had, yeah, exactly. We had those guys. Like, that was like, so I mean, we still have like a core team that we're not losing. I was just
But
saying,
like
in
a
terms of
fan
like,
favorite, but a fan favorite that like
yeah.
no matter what they do, they're never going to be
And that's why I
judged.
think Alonso is different, and that's where I kind of disagree. Yeah, Cohen's running this like a business, but I'd like to think that he wouldn't just trade Alonso at the deadline, even if we can get him back next year. I feel like that's like it's a fan favorite. Like, not for
It's something
nothing,
you
Johan
need.
Ramirez,
Yes.
Tonkin, and Teron, like they're not Alonso. They're not, Nimmo or Lindor. And it is, these guys are adults as much as, yeah, they could be clubhouse presence and it's not good to just cut players, but this is, it's still a team. They're adults. They're all been doing this for decades and they've made it this far and they understand that you need to perform at a certain level and they weren't doing that great. And yeah, it's just kind of sucks to like drop them so fast, but I don't know, maybe this will be the only three for a while.
Yeah. Oh,
Because
that's a
if
good
it's
point.
three a week, like that's a whole different
Three
story,
a week.
but.
No, that's a good point, David. Yeah, they know. They know what the deal is. They know what the deal is. Speaking of players, other players the Mets have, JD Martinez, who we did sign for a big old contract for this year, 1 year, $12 million, apparently has a setback and received a with a setback with lower back tightness and received a cortisone shot. So for all intents and purposes, he'll be in AAA indefinitely until he improves, I guess. That stinks. We were really excited for his arrival to the big league club, but maybe that opens the door for Mark Vientos. Maybe that means DJ Stewart gets, a second life to really show what he's made of. I mean, he had the big home run in Atlanta 2 days ago. We'll see. Maybe that extra time maybe buys someone a little, a little more graciousness from the Mets staff. What do you guys think? You guys think we're who said that he's Jed Lowry? When do you guys say he's like Jed Lowry?
Yeah, I think I saw that comment online somewhere. I don't know if you guys remember Jed Lowry. I think, what did we sign him for, like a second base? But then similarly, he just never played for us and then just like left the team. It was the same thing. It was this veteran guy. This was a couple of years ago, and then just like got injured and just never saw him.
Yeah, I remember this. And then he went back to Oakland.
Something like that. Yeah, it was a weird
I think he
he
might
had a
have played like
big
four
resurgence.
games.
He had a big resurgence in Oakland.
Yeah, he was a good player, Jed Lowry. I hope that does not happen with JD. I hope we see JD in a Mets uniform very soon, because that'd be great. Or we trade him at the deadline, like we were all thinking might happen.
I mean, he hasn't, we haven't had him yet. So it's hard to, it's like Senga we had last year, we know we have there. And like Mark JD like hasn't been here. And yeah, like it sucks to like lose him, but like I don't know, we're in the same position we are now. We still have the same hitters we've got. So it's,
Yeah.
I don't know. I never got my hopes up for him. Still not around,
Well,
not hurt.
it's so funny because like once we saw that signing, I think that was before the season started, we penciled him as the four hole.
Yeah.
And the Mets had McNeil penciled in the four hole. So like all these expectations that we had, 2 weeks ago are already becoming like unfurled because either, someone's not producing or somebody has setbacks. And I think it's like probably a good representation of like how we should focus on what we do have rather than what we can have. We have a Zach Short, we have a Tyrone Taylor. We were writing Tyrone Taylor off when the season started, but he's been producing.
Yeah.
So instead of, see looking elsewhere, see what we already have. And
Totally.
even going into like our pitching. We've been like kind of banking on Senga coming back, but I think they just announced that he's going from the 15th to the 60-day IL.
Yeah.
Like, there's so
Which means
many
he's
like
Yeah, it means he can't come back until May 27th now.
there's so many things that we didn't factor in day one of the season. So, that's so indicative of the sport that baseball is, where season doesn't start on day one. The season is day one through 162. It's every day you have to make adjustments.
I love this non-answer from Carlos Mendoza. I mean, he's like the most like stereotypical baseball manager answer. On the on Senga being transferred, he says, from the beginning we knew it was going to take time. We've been slow playing it from the beginning. We took that extra couple of weeks before we started playing catch in spring training. There's nothing new to it. It's just more where we're at, where he's at.
That doesn't give any information.
Classic. Classic, classic,
I mean, at
classic.
this point, let's hope he plays before the All-Star game. I mean, it's
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
hopefully, like, come on. He was thrown a few weeks ago. Oh, that's a good sign, at least. Then
I
let's
hope
hope
he
this is a
comes
real
back
60 days.
super healthy. Yeah, I hope he's like ready to start right away when he comes back.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it like that, it's like, all right, if they really don't think he's going to play until that time, it's like, what's the harm in putting him on the 60-day IL if he's really not going to get there. So, yeah.
And that was one of our arguments last week when we were trying to figure out a pitcher to replace McGill. We're like, oh, do we need to, move one of our 26 day to our 40 day to make room for a Buddha or something? That's the first 15 days, like you have to have, there's some like random rules, but we could have brought other people up before signing Teron, and does that affect our budget or our payroll going forward?
All right. Well, in other Mets news, there's been this push co-signed by Steve Cohen to give Francisco Lindor a standing ovation when he returns to Citi Field, a la what Philadelphia did for Trey Turner last year, and he started to play a little bit better. I guess it couldn't hurt. I mean, I think it's probably a good idea. Why not? I think the fact that he knows it's coming and everything is going to be a funny thing to see, but I'm into it. I mean, I'm rooting for Francisco like anyone is. It's just obviously very frustrating to see where he's playing.
And I didn't realize Steve Cohen was behind that. I thought there was a couple of people who were just throwing that out there. I mean, what is Steve Cohen going to say? No, I don't even do that.
He's
Like,
like, yeah,
I didn't
pasta me as
realize
well.
like it got that high up like
It wasn't
in
like he like made like a press conference about it. It was like on Twitter. Someone tweeted it. He just like retweeted it and said, "Love this idea. Like positivity goes a long way. It worked for Trey Turner in Philly."
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
so.
that's I still didn't know the fact that he did that was still cool.
Yeah. So we'll see if he responds to it. Another thing is, the City Connect jerseys have been teased by the Mets Twitter and Instagram social media. They will be announced, these new jerseys, next Friday, the 19th. And there's been a little hint that it might be in purple. I think there could be something fun. Maybe there's some fun 7 train crossover we can do. If they look great and they say Queens, I probably will buy one. I haven't bought a jersey, maybe like an official jersey, maybe ever. So we'll see. We'll see how they look.
I'll definitely be buying it. You know me, I have my specialty jerseys. I have like all this all-star jerseys.
Ray loves his gear, man. He loves his gear. All righty. Well, let's wrap up with a little bit of the road ahead. What's going on? Obviously, there's a rainout tonight. That will be played in all August. No,
September.
September. September. As Ray mentioned that earlier, or David mentioned, the Mets return home on Friday to face Kansas City and the Pirates for 6 games. Both the Royals and the Pirates are playing pretty well. The Royals have the second best ERA in Major League Baseball, surprisingly, at 2.52. For context, the Red Sox have the best with a 167. The Mets are in seventh in MLB with a 342. Unfortunately, though, Seth Lugo, former Met, who has a new starting role, finally he got that starting pitcher position he's always wanted. Happy for him, but he's pitching tonight, so we won't see him pitch in Queens. But this weekend, there is some fun Mets history. There's a Dwight Gooden bobble arm. Not a bobblehead, but an arm that looks like it makes a throwing motion. So if you go to the game, I guess you can get a fun little souvenir. And then his retirement for his number is on Sunday. And then it's Jackie Robinson Day on Monday, on the 15th.
Well, I think for Jackie Robinson Day, Mets did something last year. It was like Black Remembrance Day. And I think it's like acknowledging Jackie, but also acknowledging like the Negro League and like all the other leagues, like the players that were not recognized before them. And I give kudos to that,
That's sick. That's pretty cool. I don't remember that, but that's amazing. And I think obviously the Negro Leagues are a huge part of baseball
I
history.
might be mistaken that with like Juneteenth, but I think it's they do it on Jackie Robinson Day.
That's great. Yeah, I don't know. I'll look up the history. I don't know when they might have done that or when they did it last year. I don't remember.
I think
But
last
yeah.
year was the first year. I saw like something on Instagram, and I could be mistaken, but I was trying to find it, but.
All right. Well, that probably wraps us up for this episode. We will finish off with our trivia question. Guess the Met. Ray, what is your question? Or do you have any guesses? What do you guys
Can
think?
we go back to what
And you want to repeat the
main
question real fast?
statistics? All right. This player had a 16-year major league career. His last 2 years in 2006 and 2007 were with the Mets, despite being a 243 lifetime hitter with a 769 OPS. He performed exceptionally well in 2006. He played 137 games. He bat 271, and his on-base plus slugging was 820. He also had 18 home runs and 62 RBI.
I have a guess. I'll let you go first, though, Ray.
So I forget what my question was earlier. It's been a long show. I have two. It's definitely not Mo Vaughn, but would it be Fernando Tatis Sr.?
Unfortunately, both of those are incorrect.
I'm
I like the
gonna. Is it?
Tatis guess, though.
He was like, I think he's the only player with like two grand slams in the same game.
Yeah, in
I could
same
be wrong
inning,
about that.
actually.
Same inning. Yes.
That's why I was.
Is
Jesus
it
Christ,
Cliff
we
Floyd?
wasted a good trivia question.
It is not Cliff Floyd either.
Is it, can I guess again?
Yeah.
Is it Jose Valentin?
It is Jose Valentin.
Oof.
Congratulations,
I was
David.
trying to think of obscure 2006 Mets,
Yes,
and I was like,
Jose
I don't.
Valentin. I remember that year having a very good year. I did not know until I looked him up today that the last, like the 2007, was the last of his career. I thought he made it, went on to play other, to play baseball somewhere else. But he had a whole career before that. I had no idea. He played, it looks like, 8 or 9 years in Milwaukee, and then another 5 years, 6 years in Chicago for the White Sox. He played a year with the Dodgers before the Mets, and then he started with the Mets in 2006, played in 2007, and then called it a career.
Wow.
Yeah, Jose Valentin. He was our second baseman for most of that year, I remember. But yeah, huge part of that 2006 run. So thanks for playing. Good guess, David. And that good guess will take us to the end of our episode of episode 37 of Foolishly Faithful. Thank you all for listening. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, hate mail, fan mail, trivia questions, guess that met, gosh, anything you want to say, shoot. Email us, foolishlyfaithfulmetspod@gmail.com, or on Instagram, foolishly_faithful. On behalf of David and Ray, this is Eric.
We
L.
miss Steve.
We
We
miss
miss
Steve.
Steve.
He'll be back. He'll be back
Wish he
next
was
week.
here.
Wish he was here. On
The
behalf of.
eclipse was a great thing. Aside from baseball trivia, we had an earthquake, we had an eclipse. Sometimes,
A lot of
nat
natural
natural
phenomena going. Yeah.
disasters.
A lot of natural phenomena going on. Let's hope they sway the Mets to the more to the win column. All right. On behalf of all of us, LFGM.